siempre está. Todo lo que tengo es mío y de los demás. Soy un gallo en la mañana, un gato al anochecer, y he comido la manzana del placer. Soy un mendigo ante el diablo y millonario ante Dios. Hablo poco cuando hablo, sin alzar la voz. Soy además mentiroso, vanidoso y buen actor, y quisiera ser dichoso en el amor.
Viewpoints expressed in this program are the opinions of the people expressing them and are not necessarily those of Fresh Air Incorporated, its staff, or its board of directors.
Hi, this is Al McFarlane, host of The Conversation with Al McFarlane. You're listening to 98.3 FM, KFAI, Minneapolis.
Welcome to MN90, Minnesota History in 90 Seconds.
During times of economic recession, one of the first areas people try to cut costs is at the supermarket. That might be bad news for steak and lobster, but it's great news for a little thing called... That's right, Spam, a product that Hormel Corporation, based in Austin, Minnesota, likes to call meat with a pause button. Spam, which stands for spiced ham, was invented by Jay Hormel, son of the company's founder, during an earlier economic downturn. The Great Depression. One of Spam's most beloved qualities is the fact that it's cheap and has a long shelf life. Fans also seem to love its versatility.
What you got, Lynn? Well, there's egg and bacon, egg and Spam, egg, bacon and Spam, egg, bacon, sausage and Spam, Spam, egg, Spam, Spam, bacon and Spam.
That skit from Monty Python's Flying Circus is widely believed to be the origin of the more recent use of the word spam to describe excessive online posts or messages. The actual food spam is much more well-liked. In fact, it's eaten around the world and is especially popular in Hawaii, South Korea, and the UK.
Spam for you and spam for me. We'll all live together in spam.
MN90 is produced by Ampers, diverse radio for Minnesota's communities. Made possible by funding from the Minnesota Arts and Cultural Heritage Fund. Online at mn90.org.
I'm Al McFarlane. Welcome to The Conversation with Al McFarlane. For today, we're calling it Conversaciones con Al McFarlane. Today, in honor of Our Afro-Latin culture, we are presenting in both English and in Spanish, and I'm so pleased to have to co-pilot with me today my friend and colleague, Carmencita Robles. Carmen, bienvenido. Tanto me gusta verte otra vez. ¿Cómo va?
Muy, muy, muy bien. Gracias, maestro. Qué gusto estar aquí con usted. Yo lo ando buscando.
Claro. Well, you know, it's good to be in touch again. And yes, sí. One of the things we want to do today is to communicate both in English and in Spanish. Lo más posible en español. Yo digo que ya estoy aprendiendo a hablarlo, pero tanto me gusta que tú me ayudas. Tú me ayudas
usted
a conocer más de mi herencia latina. Y por
usted
eso
sabe, usted
tengo
sabe,
gratitud.
Usted sabe que empezó conversaciones de salud conmigo.
Sí.
Usted sabe que me apoyó escribir en español, hablar en español, y me alegro que usted tiene su español.
Well, very, very nice. Thank you so much.
Gracias.
So today we want to have this conversation in a bilingual fashion. Carmen, take a minute, if you would, and talk more about Conversaciones de Salud, your journey, how you've come to where we are today, and the important work you do in elevating community.
Oh,
my favorite. En español, también en inglés. Traduzco.
Yo soy bilingüe. I'm from Brooklyn. I can do
that.
Mira, so once upon a time, there was Mario Duarte and Al McFarlane beginning this to plant the seeds of news y comunicación en la comunidad, to tell stories, and both of you were generous and kind enough to bring me in and teach me. I never thought I was a writer. All my papers from work, from school, came back with red Fs. And I would tell papi que era pa fabuloso, you know, pero yo no sabía nothing. Y hoy, la razón que escribo, que tengo conversaciones de salud, es por Al McFarlane y por Mario Duarte. Y la razón que trabajo tanto con la comunidad es, again, por Mario Duarte y Al McFarlane, que me conectaron con Centro Cultural Chicano, that now is Centro Tyrone Guzmán. And you have given me not only the soil, that fertile soil to plant a seed, but you watered it and took care of it and made sure that in these past 45 years, Al McFarlane, we have come together at this moment. Y es con mucho orgullo que Conversaciones de Salud today is really taking on. And it's directly, all the crumbs lead directly to you. And especialmente con Afrodescendientes, our column that you so graciously allowed me to write and to have fun with. And to have a full circle right now para hablar con Amicar y hablar sobre el Afrodescendientes, and also to give it life. Clarence Jones from Human, he wants to bring life to Afrodescendientes, Afro-Latino. And it all the roads lead back to Insight News. So I just been wanting to thank you so much for this opportunity. It's been 6 years we've been working on opioids. In la comunidad latina, 6 años. And all of this, we could really, really never have impacted so much had it not been for Insight News and the work you do in the community. And you're a businessman. You're not a nonprofit, you know, and yet you empower the community. You allow us to work and to become entrepreneurs, to become publishers. Eso quiere decir el poder que usted tiene para enseñar, no solamente para vender y dame, pero para enseñar, para poder que la comunidad suba. And that some poor girl from the Lower East Side of New York who couldn't read or write or spell in either language, today tiene un periódico. And I'm so excited to send you my copies. So at the end of the show, you'll tell me where I can do that, okay?
Okay. Well, let me take a break and introduce you again, Carmen Robles, from your notes. And the notes are important because they sort of give the narrative that frames and contextualizes our conversation and relationship. So Carmen Robles has for more than 30 years worked in grassroots community development. She's an expert in bringing together key stakeholders to foster self-sufficiency within the Latino communities through access and equitable inclusion towards health and education equality. Her strong background in public relations and multicultural marketing and in youth development earned her a national recognition. She's recognized and respected as a journalist and a storyteller. Her background includes an appointment to the Minnesota State Board of Education. She was the legislative and cultural liaison to then Minnesota Governor Arnie Carlson. She was also recognized in a Peabody Award-winning mentoring campaign. She is a successful program developer, trainer, coach, a motivational, inspirational, and engaging public speaker. She is the mother of two, grandmother of three, which includes her cat. Carmen Robles is also a breast cancer survivor and a clay and glass mosaic artist. Carmen, so good to be connected with you and to be part of your journey. I remember, Carmen, meeting you when Insight was located at 430, I think, First Avenue in the Kikernick building in downtown Minneapolis. At that time, we were changing our typography systems and we needed someone to do typesetting for Insight News. Also at that time, I believe, if my memory serves me correctly, we were getting into what we call the ethnic heritage series. And the idea then, which really is what we're doing today, is to focus on the cultural groups that make up community. And one of the segments of that back in those days was the, I think, Hispanic Heritage Series. And you were on board to both produce and execute the creation of that project. Do you remember that?
Oh, yes. Oh, my gosh. It was at a time in my life where I was in need of family. And I had no family except the Latino family. And so that just engulfed me and my children and gave me a purpose, you know, something solid. And I had my typing skills because in those days, when you went to high school, you had to learn a trade. Mm-hmm. Yeah, in New York. And so my trade was typing. And and you offered me a job to typeset.
That's right. And you and you were amazing. You were amazing. Yeah.
yes. Those were those early days, and you had just come from the Pioneer Press, hadn't you?
Yes.
And yes, and it was like, why is he doing this? He could have been at the Pioneer Press. Yes, I was taught by absolute masters of the field. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Well, let's do this. Let's keep talking about where we've come from. One of the things we've done over the years, well, one thing you've done for me is helped me develop confidence in speaking Spanish and in examining and talking about my multicultural roots to present myself as Afro-Cubano. Y to hablar de mi herencia del espíritu del sentimiento de ser cubano. Fue en la, ¿cómo se dice? Wedding. ¿Cómo se dice?
La boda.
La boda de mi hermano menor. Él se casó a una mujer como yo, first generation.
Primera generación, sí.
Sí. Y cuando, when I attended their wedding, I had a chance to address the family in Spanish. And it took me some time to write it and think it out, but I wrote out what my feelings were about the importance of community, about culture, and about us being a larger and growing family. The Cubans from my father's side and the Cubans from my sister-in-law's side, and it was a wonderful experience. But all of that leads to and led to the feeling that ultimately resulted in the creation of Afrodescendientes. And that's the special project that we undertook about 2 years ago. We're developing it again to relaunch in January. But it's a section of the newspaper that we take one story or maybe two and present that story in both English and Spanish. We started, then we decided to add Portuguese. Then we decided to add French. There are people in Haiti. Then we decided to add Yoruba because all of us are West African in origin. Then we decided to add Somali because there are so many Somalis in Minnesota. Yeah. And so at the end of the day, we ended up with a representation of the various idioms that we show up in. Not all of them, but many of them, the major ones. We think that that's important. That also complements what I've been doing simultaneously, Carmen, and that is the study of hieroglyphics. So of late, yo estoy estudiando hieroglífica.
Eso, I should have known.
Of course, right?
Dime más, cuéntame, cuéntame, dime más, wow.
Well, yeah. But the idea is to become and to continue the love affair with language, to understand the importance of speech, of the word, how magnificent and how powerful these words we know and love and use are, and how we can grow in relationship to each other and to the Creator by really taking seriously what we think, what we say, and have that reflect what we do. Let me reflect on that a little bit, but let me add one more voice to the conversation. And let's bring her in. I'm hoping a couple of other people will join us as well, but we'll see if they're able to make it. So Yvette Isaiah Martinez is here, and she's a senior program officer for advocacy at the Greater Twin Cities United Way. We can say that she and I are connected because I serve on the board of directors of United Way, and currently serving as the chairman of the board. And we ask Yvette to join you, talk about community and what it means. And what she said in her notes to me is that working in community and specifically with the Latin community is a vital part of my identity. It connects me to my roots, it shapes who I am today, and serves as a constant reminder of the knowledge I have yet to gain. It is a journey of mutual learning and support, reminding me that there is always more to discover about our vibrant. Now, Yvette Isaiah Martinez is a proud Latina from Venezuela. She's a wife and mother of two. With over a decade of experience in community leadership and development, in youth programming, and gender violence prevention, gender equity, and community engagement. In her role as a senior program officer, community engagement at Twin Cities, Greater Twin Cities United Way, she's dedicated to collaborating with the community to drive systemic change through advocacy and engagement initiatives that promote equity and address pressing community challenges. Bienvenido, Yvette. ¿Cómo está?
Muy bien, gracias. Un gusto conocerte, Carmen. Always good to see you.
That has been forever. It's like a homecoming. Qué bendición, gracias. Buen día.
Indeed.
Well, let's do this. Let's have you introduce yourself the way I did, sort of reading your bio, but say the same thing yourself in your own words. And you can say it both in English and in Spanish, because the object today is to reveal and reflect, to be the connection between our idiomatic opportunities.
Yes, of course. You know, it's funny because whenever I get asked about introducing myself, it is actually very much part of the culture that I find it hard to talk about myself without talking about my community, right? Without talking about my people. So it's one question I always struggle with. So let's start with this. I am originally from Venezuela, moved here in February of next year. It will be 30 years. I have always lived in the state of Minnesota. So to many of my Venezuelan friends, I'm too Minnesotan, and to most people from Minnesota, I'm still too Venezuelan, so I call myself a Venezotan. I also marry a Puerto Rican, so, you know, it's my household is Puerto Rican, Venezotan, Puerto Minnesotan. I have worked in the nonprofit sector for about 15 years. I came to it really by a leap of fate. And I was so lucky to to start with our culturally specific organization, Esperanza United, in the work mm-hmm. of domestic violence prevention. You know, when I moved to Minnesota as an immigrant, I lost my voice. So many things get taken from you, your leadership, your voice, you're not sure how or where you fit in. Mm-hmm. You can't really connect or relate to people via your language. Cultural practices are different, that I get very used to being quiet and mm-hmm. sitting at the end of the room and observing mm-hmm. and really truly believing that my opinion didn't matter. Mm-hmm. I needed to do what I was seeing. And it's incredible, but the work of domestic violence prevention helped me find my voice again. So it was that connection of being mm-hmm. both serving in a culturally specific mm-hmm. organization in Minnesota. And that gave me the opportunity to be in community, to be with my people, with Latina survivors of violence. And it's mm. precisely their strength, their resiliency, the incredible amount of knowledge and love mm. that each participant I work with had that helped me find my voice. And 15 years later, here I am. I have navigated through several programs in the areas of DV, housing, economic development, youth development, and now taking a try at policy and advocacy because we need representation.
Yep. Favor de decir lo mismo en español.
Claro que sí. Mi nombre es Yvette Isaya Martínez. Primero que nada, soy de Venezuela y estaba hablando un poco que como buena parte cultural, para mí es difícil muchas veces hablar de mí sin hablar de mi comunidad. Y es quiénes somos, ¿verdad? Pensamos en nuestra comunidad, es parte del colectivismo. Yo llegué al mundo de non-profit hace 15 años por casualidad o quizás por brincar al vacío con mis ojos cerrados y esperar lo mejor, como pasan muchas cosas. Y llegué a una organización, Esperanza United, que es culturalmente específica y trabaja en la prevención e intervención de violencia doméstica. Y fue precisamente allí donde volví a encontrar mi voz. Y le comentaba a Alia Carmen que cuando llegué aquí como inmigrante hace 30 años, siempre he estado en Minnesota, perdí un poco de mi voz, de mi seguridad. Me acostumbré mucho a sentarme en la parte de atrás de las reuniones o del salón y simplemente limitarme a hacer lo que veía, ¿verdad? Para tratar de ser invisible. Y si era invisible, pues nadie me iba a molestar. Pero increíblemente fue en el trabajo de prevención de violencia doméstica en el centro de mi comunidad donde volví a encontrar mi voz y mi fuerza. Y sigue siendo un trabajo en evolución. 15 años después aquí estoy. He tenido el gran privilegio de trabajar junto a la comunidad en áreas de vivienda, de desarrollo económico, desarrollo de capacidad de jóvenes, en prevención de violencia. Y ahora aquí probando suerte en el área de abogacía y política pública porque necesitamos representación. Es el lugar donde podemos crear cambio sistémico y hace falta. El trabajo directo es esencial y es importante, pero también tenemos que estar en el Capitolio.
Bien dicho.
Gracias, Carmen.
Sí, sí. Y la organización, la conocí, Esperanza, Casa de Esperanza, Elsa Vega Pérez, and the early founders. Y me da un orgullo de todo el trabajo. Yo todavía la llamo Casa de Esperanza, you know. Oops, I still call the neighborhood house. Pero qué bello oír tu historia, llegar ahí, encontrar tu voz en un sitio que no había voz, you know, y se me paran los pelos. Congratulations, yeah.
Gracias.
Carmen, get dropped from the feed, just keep going, okay? Because sometimes the internet is unstable. So just so you know.
No problem.
So we got a couple of comments. One, I'll see if I can post it here, from a viewer named Queen Mother Emaku Nefret. And she has muchos besos. Gracias para eso sobre Afro-Latin cultura. Es mi sangre con Afro-American. Thank you for that comment. And she made another comment
following that one, if I can share that as well. Let's see, where is it? She says, here it is, there are many Afro-Latins who have been here since American slavery, like my family. We are considered invisible in history, both in Latin and in U.S. culture. So I want to go into that because, Carmen, you and I have had that conversation. As often as not, I grew up, my father born in Cuba, his father from Jamaica. I went to Jamaica a number of times, you know, it was regular for me, but I've not been to Cuba yet. I know Cuba from both study of the language and dreaming about what it means to be Cuban and the feeling I have. But like Jamaica, I believe Cuba also went through a period, and I'm sure this is true in Venezuela as well, where people who were African were always kept to the margin, and that even we believe that the gold standard was, we speak Spanish, we speak Portuguese, gold standard is Spain or Portugal, right? And so we would perpetuate this civic agreement, the social structure agreement, that white is right, and the closer you are to white, the closer you are to God, and the things that come out of our African and Black experience are things we should hide. I think, Carmen, I remember you telling me about people at home in Puerto Rico having the grandmother in the back room upstairs, right? Grandmother's Black, but when nobody wants to.
When she come to Wisconsin, not in Puerto Rico. In Puerto Rico, we celebrated her.
Okay.
In Wisconsin, we kept her in the back. Don't come outside. Then that means we're Black? No.
Mm-hmm.
No.
Don't tell anybody, right? So let's talk about that. What does it mean? What is the question of color in the Latino world from your experience, your understanding, and how are things evolving? I have connected with my colleagues and friends in Brazil, for example, and they were saying to me, the activists, that, you know, Brazil and much of Latin America is simply 20 or so years behind North America, United States, in terms of the civil rights movement, that what we have done in protesting and challenging and demanding equity and inclusion has an impact globally, but it certainly is also embraced by our communities and our cultures in Latin America. One thing this journey has meant for me is the awareness that there are more of us who speak Spanish than speak English. And that's kind of the Eurocentric or Americocentric or gringocentric attitude, where you think that what's here is the whole thing, but it's not, you know? And so when I think African-Americans finally discover and learn that we are among many millions of people with African blood of African descent who are in the new world, then it changes the story altogether. It creates new relationships, new understandings, new power. And we discovered that in each of these communities, our people were suppressed, our cultures suppressed, ignored, minimized, and people were encouraged to be more like white people, more like Europeans. What do you think? Let's have that conversation. Is that a fair description or not? Carmen, what do you think? And Yvette, your point, your experience as well.
Puerto Rico, my heart's devotion, let it sink into the ocean. That was West Side Story. I was 11 years old. My sister took me to the movies. We were Pentecostal. We couldn't go anywhere, but she took me. And I was loving it. When they said that, I stood up, screamed, no! They had to carry me out of there. To this day, I feel that way. So to answer your question through a lot of emotions, in mi casa, we were like, you're lucky to be Puerto Rican and you're lucky to be in America. And so I carry that. I work with jóvenes and I tell them, you must learn English. And then I learned that, you know, English is like number 9 in the world. And it's like, whoa, all those things you must, and this is how you do it. And You know, it's a rude awakening. I always felt que yo nunca creí que Puerto Rico quería dar su isla y quería que alguien viniera y le dijera que todo que hacer. Yo nunca creí eso. I never believed that Native Indians, que they really sold New York for beads. You know, esas cosas nunca me entraron. Y cuando me mandaron para Wisconsin, a donde hay indios, a donde no hay puertorriqueños no more, la realidad was really traumatic. To this day, I'm stuck in that time period. De la realidad que mis padres creyeron que they instilled in me, to la realidad que yo vi con mis propios ojos, to la realidad. Y como dijo Yvette, I agree with you, Yvette. Mi voz vino cuando yo usé mi voz para la comunidad. Para mí, yo no tenía voz, no voice whatsoever. Pero para otro, y being Puerto Rican, I didn't need no stinking papers, you know? It's like, what? I don't need no badges. So eso a mí me dio hasta más confianza. And y ahora with Bad Bunny, the reason I love Bad Bunny is because he loves Puerto Rico. I don't even know his music, I don't care, but he loves Puerto Rico. Y todo de Puerto Rico con la abuela allá en la montaña, you know. So ese amor de la isla, de la gente, de esa cosa that we lost because, you know, Puerto Ricans, we can't even get food. Venezuela can't feed us. Venezuela had a boat right there for Maria, Hurricane Maria, para ayudar a los puertorriqueños. We couldn't even take it because you can't come and help us because it has to be an American boat with American drivers. It has to be built by America, who doesn't build anything. Entonces, pues, esa cosa de que la realidad. Are we lucky that we have electricity in Puerto Rico? Well, do we have electricity in Puerto Rico? Are we lucky, you know, que tenemos nice casas, pero no tenemos patria, no tenemos la montaña más, no podemos ir para la playa, you know. So mi corazón está like just busting out because if my parents were alive, this would kill them. You know, la realidad que Puerto Rico is really a colony, you know, it's really, yeah, it was, yeah, and we were really used, the women were really giving operations and pills so that they could not have more children, so that population could be, you know, oppressed with the pills. Mm-hmm. And so it was Puerto Rico where the pharmaceutical companies, you know, did their jobs and threw all the trash into the streams. And yeah, so that's a good question you send my way. I will continue to ponder it.
We think about it all the time, and I think we have to.
I'll to your question that your description was pretty accurate. I believe there's been some involvement, perhaps even more so in the Caribbean countries. So the Spanish speaking countries in the Caribbean, Brazil, of course, in Venezuela, in Colombia. Colombia has a really strong Afro Latino movement of reclaiming the Afro roots and culture. Which is truly inspiring, but I think your description was right on point. You know, I was thinking about Latino heritage and what it means to me, really. Mm-hmm. And as I was thinking about it, I was reflecting on, I never really had to think about it until I moved here. But the reason why I never had to think about it until I moved here is also because I'm a lighter skinned Latina. Mm-hmm. So in Venezuela, I never really had to worry about what my physical appearance meant to people, right? I didn't face systemic barriers because I was an Afro-Latina or my hair wasn't straight. So it in reality is, I would say, and this is going back to 1996. I moved here when I was 16 in 96. So before that, I can't speak to Venezuela now because unfortunately I have not been able to go back in 30 years. But back then, there was certainly a difference that was marked, not just with Afro-Latinos, but with our indigenous communities too. Mm-hmm. I'm very saddened to say that my knowledge of indigenous communities in Venezuela is very minimal, very, 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 very mm-hmm. minimal. Mm-hmm. I can name them, but I really can't go back and tell you what are some of our cultural practices that come from indigenous communities. From our Afro-Latinos in Venezuela, I can, because it, you know, it's this thing of not recognized in history, not celebrated for the contributions. Mm-hmm. But the minute that a drum comes out at the beach, everybody remembers we have Afro-Latino culture, right? That's it's right. Like, nope, nobody can resist the beat of the drum, myself included. So, you know, it was really interesting the ways that it showed up, but then how conveniently we forgot that side of our history when it came to having access and just for equity to be present. So, yes, I would say when I was growing up in Venezuela, the least privileged neighborhoods were highly populated by Afro-Latinos. The schools at more disadvantage were more so with Afro-Latino children. Mm-hmm. You know, and so it's work in progress. That's why I said it's a work in progress. Mm-hmm. When I was filling out the form for the show, one of the questions was, what is a book that you have read recently? And I started reading How to Be Anti-Racist in Spanish. I knew the book existed in English, but I really wanted to read it in Spanish to mm-hmm. better grasp the concept. And there's just so much that we still don't know. I'm mm-hmm. 45 years old, and I always say I'm not an expert at anything. And certainly the recognition of the contributions, the forced contributions, because it wasn't even willingly, our Afro-descendants did not come here by choice, did not make it to this continent by choice. So forced contributions to some degree, right, or for all of it. We need to do better. We certainly need to do better, and it's not enough to not be racist. We have to cross the bridge to become anti-racist. And I don't know, that's not something that I knew about, right? Mm-hmm. I learned about not being racist when I moved here, but I'm learning now about how do I become an anti-racist, because mm-hmm. not being racist mm-hmm. isn't enough.
Mm-hmm. Let me check out some of the comments. One of our regular viewers mm-hmm. and listeners is the Big Cheese. And the Big Cheese made the comment, I'll put it on the screen here, that I so wish there were a Black and Brown coalition. What a powerhouse that could have been. Unfortunately, he says, I think it's a he, the Latino community chose to be on the side of WS, I think that's white supremacy, by overwhelmingly voting for Trump. That's one comment. He goes on to say, unfortunately, the FBA is Foundational Black Americans, that's a new concept, you may not be familiar with it, doesn't understand what you're saying because we don't speak Spanish. Well, it is unfortunate because we should speak Spanish and we should own many languages. We should sort of raise ourselves to understand our capacity to be polyglot, to navigate 4, 5, 6 languages comfortably, at ease, because we're human beings, and human beings are capable of doing that. Big Cheese goes on to say, unfortunately, too many Blanco Latinos bring the class system to the United States. So those are all comments. Another person just says, congratulations again, Michelle Delicious Delights is a regular viewer. Greetings, Brother Al McFarland and distinguished guest. I'm Al McFarland. This is The Conversation with Al McFarland. And we're celebrating Afro-Latin culture, Latino culture. We're celebrating human beings in this great conversation. Mm-hmm. And so I'm pleased to have as guest my friend Carmen Robles, and also joining me is my colleague from the Greater Twin Cities United Way, Yvette Isaiah Martinez. Sharing some of the comments that we're monitoring online, people that are watching the program on YouTube. Earlier, Queen Mother Imaku Nefret said, by the way, Shai Nefer, good luck, in your Medu Neter studies. Medu Neter is the study of hieroglyphics. Medu Neter is divine speech. And so she says, good luck in your medu netter studies, Brother McFarland. I speak and teach Kemetic language. And boy, is it wonderful to learn that language. She also says, my queen mother title came through the Kemetic installment. Imaku means reverend in Medu Netter. So she's going to listen to the rest of the program now. Wonderful topic, Du'au. I'm not sure what Du'au means, but Queen Mother, I will learn that as well. And here's one more comment. The Big Cheese says, I live in Southern California where racism is heavy against Black people in the Latino community. Well, let me stop with that. You know, Carmen and Yvette, what are the feelings that you hear and see? Because there's a lot of discussion right now after the election about, you know, maybe 80% of Black women and 50 or 60, 70% of Black men voted for Kamala Harris, but the numbers were far different in the Latino community, particularly among Latino males. Are we in the Latino community as focused on that discussion, that consideration, as we in the African community seem to be? What are you feeling? What are you hearing? What are you thinking? Carmen, what do you think?
Okay. Bueno, en mi comunidad, nosotros estamos tan ocupados con el momento que estamos con nuestras familias que están en otros países, con los problemas que tenemos en el momento. Y la comunidad, My Demographics, con mm-hmm. quien yo trabajo, esa comunidad. Usted está hablando más para la comunidad que votes y que hacen eso. Aquí en Minnesota yo pienso que estuvimos bien, fue en Florida y en esos estados. Yo no estoy ahí, so yo no puedo hablar por ellos. Pero en mi comunidad, especially for Puerto Ricans, we're very political. You know, mi casa era toda la política de Puerto Rico. I'm sure Yvette, with her Puerto Rican side of the family, you know, con un pernil y arroz con gandules and a little dominoes game, and you're talking politics, ¿verdad? Pero para mí, en estos momentos y en mis años que estoy trabajando, especially since COVID, all of my concentration is going para la salud y para dar recursos y para dar las ganas y dar la esperanza a nuestra comunidad. Los problemas que mi comunidad me traen a mí, no es que voy a perder mi casa si me sacan de aquí, pero es, mi hijo está enterrado aquí. ¿Cómo voy a llevar a mi hijo que está muerto, enterrado, para donde me van a botar? So, you know, yo, mi trabajo un poquito diferente en los pensamientos, en las conversaciones que tenemos. Pero perhaps Yvette puede dar más información. Te lo paso a ti, Yvette.
Sí, claro que sí. Yo creo que varía, Al, y quiero hacer la aclaratoria que los sentimientos que yo expresé aquí no son opiniones de Greater Two Cities United Way, pero son observaciones bajo mi experiencia. Yo creo que mucho es basado en miedo. No podemos negar lo compleja de la historia política de nuestros países latinoamericanos y de la eterna batalla entre partidos de derecha, izquierda, la confusión entre lo que es comunismo y lo que es socialismo, y muchas veces se equipara a que comunismo es igual a socialismo, y en realidad no es lo mismo, ¿verdad? Pero muchas veces en nuestros países latinoamericanos tendemos a pensar que sí. ¿Qué pasa? Que yo siento personalmente que en muchos de nuestros países latinoamericanos nuestras comunidades votan por un partido, no por un individuo y los valores que ese individuo trae. Entonces nos acostumbramos a votar por una ideología partidista y porque esta persona representa el partido por el que históricamente nuestra familia ha votado o fue lo que escuchamos cuando estábamos creciendo. Asociamos y es casi como una cuestión de lealtad, ¿verdad? Yo sé que en Puerto Rico hay dos partidos que muchas veces es el PNP y el Partido Popular, creo que son, ¿verdad? Y yo no entiendo de ninguno de los dos, pero me da mucha risa porque las discusiones no son de candidatos individuales ni cuáles son las políticas que esos candidatos ofrecen, son verdaderamente acerca del partido y por qué partido es mejor. Yo siento que muchas veces traemos ese miedo a este país también o a cualquier país al que nos vamos. Entonces, yo verdaderamente como individuo, yo siento que no es un problema del partido, es un problema de nos estamos tomando el tiempo o tenemos el acceso, la facilidad, los recursos para entender cuáles son las políticas que un candidato que queremos apoyar o ambos están proponiendo para tomar una decisión informada, la que sea, ¿verdad? Porque no estamos aquí para decirle a la gente por qué votar, pero para que voten de verdad conscientemente de qué es lo que están escogiendo. Y luego, por supuesto, como es la política y como es el mercadeo, se aprovechan de las emociones de las personas. Si yo estoy aquí como venezolana y un candidato me dice que si yo lo elijo a él, van a resolver la situación política de Venezuela. Bueno, yo tengo mucha familia en Venezuela. Yo no he podido pisar mi país en 30 años. ¿Quiero volver? Por supuesto. ¿Quiero ver a mi familia? No me cabe la menor duda. ¿Voy a dudar entre quién apoyar? Si me convencen de que van a hacer algo por Venezuela, quizás sí. Entonces yo no veo, y muchas de las personas que se dice que apoyaron al actual presidente en estas elecciones son de Venezuela. Yo puedo tener una forma diferente de pensar, pero mi empatía, mis años en este país, mi acceso a información, a poder tener conversaciones que piensan diferente que yo, me llevan a entender que muchas de esas ideologías vienen de miedo. No quieren volver a pasar por lo que vivieron en Venezuela o por lo que alguna vez vivieron quizás en Chile bajo una dictadura o lo que vivieron en Argentina. Y es este entendimiento de que no vamos a votar por la izquierda. Y yo siempre digo, este país no tiene partido de izquierda, por lo menos no un verdadero partido de izquierda. Es una sociedad capitalista. Ambos partidos son capitalistas. Lo implementan de diferentes formas. Pero en este país no hay un partido socialista. Y eso es parte muchas veces de lo que las comunidades fuera no entienden. Yo puedo decir que en estos momentos hay muchas personas de mi familia con las que yo no puedo tener conversaciones porque no entienden y apoyan ciertas políticas en las que yo no estoy de acuerdo. Y hay esa desconexión, ¿no? Te desconecta no nada más de tu comunidad aquí, pero te conecta también de tu comunidad fuera, que verdaderamente piensan que este país tiene claramente un partido de izquierda y un partido de derecha.
Oye, pero eso fue beautiful, beautifully said. Wow. Pero ahí tocaste tantas cosas que para mí it's like connecting the dots, porque yo soy from Brooklyn, you know, Puerto Rico, puedo ir venir, y lo veo, pero no lo he vivido.
In English.
Okay, I got it. I want to thank you very much for describing it in such a manner. It was able to connect the dots for me because I'm from the United States and from Brooklyn, and I just lived Puerto Rico through stories. My first trip to Puerto Rico was when I was 40 years old. So everything has been in my head and my heart. And yeah, exactamente. Usted tiene que ir para Cuba. So Yvette, usted, gracias. Wow. This has been like a spiritual moment for me right now in connecting the dots about how, you know, our communities, the impact they had in Cuba, in Mexico, in Venezuela. Beautifully said. Thank you so very much. Wow. I'm blown away.
Well, you know what? We did, Yvette, talk to you about or introduce you as a member of the team at United Way. And I would love to take a minute to have you talk about your work there. It's an important organization. What's your vision, your focus? And how does United Way as an institution seek to serve community and what we both believe can be what's the right word for it? A spirit of belonging for all of us.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, my role at Greater Houston Cities United Way is within the advocacy team. So we work helping mobilize policy, not only at the Capitol, but agency level systemic change in the areas of housing, food, education, economic opportunity, impact around the nonprofit sector as well, of course. I joined United Way about a year ago, and prior to that, my understanding of United Way was also seeing them as a funder. But clearly, United Way is more than that. We run the 211 line, which is a line that can connect anyone in the state of Minnesota to resources, and a big collaborator as well in the 988 line with the Minnesota Department of Health, and that is the line for suicide prevention. So that's our site that connects us to direct services, and through both, there is access for people that speak several languages. You do not need to be an English speaker to reach either one of the lines. You can call, and we will either had operators that speak the native tongue of the person calling, or we can connect with translators that will help navigate the situation. In how we're connecting and how we're serving the community, you know, United Way partners, and we don't like to call it grantees because it's beyond funding, it's beyond, we call it the support beyond the dollars, right? Mm-hmm. So the organizations that we work with, they're really our partners. And specifically in the Latino community, some of the organizations that we partner with have been named. So Carmen, you mentioned Centro Tayron Guzman, which is one of our biggest partners. I mentioned Esperanza United. Clues, of course, Comunidades Latinas Unidas en Servicio is another partner. The Latino Economic Development Center, Mi Casa, out in Shakopee, Copal. And I would say there, La Oportunidad, it's another one. But there are many others, right? So I think it starts there. You know, the majority of these organizations are in the metro area, which is in terms of the funding side of the work, it is our priority area. All of them are operating either within a housing program, food, education, or economic stability. But in general, they all do fantastic work. So the mission really, the vision is to be a bridge builder, a connector. We know that United Way doesn't have the capacity nor the funding to solve all the problems and all urgent needs. But together we can, connecting the resources to the organizations that have direct access to the ground, and then make an inclusion of policy too. Like I mentioned before, yes, responding to the immediate needs is important, but it's also important to look at long-term. What is the systemic change? How can we ensure sustainability of these organizations and so many others? And that needs to come through systems change with agencies, with policies, being in the spaces where many times these organizations don't have the capacity to be at, not because lack of knowledge, because they have all the knowledge, but because of time or funding. So I'm talking about resources that presents a challenge and a barrier. So what we're trying to do in the advocacy team is, one, lift up these organizations, amplify their work, and then lead in the spaces that we recognize as leaders, for example, the early education space. But how do we amplify the voices of those that are doing the work? How do we help amplify their resources so that we can ensure long-term sustainability?
Awesome.
May I add, please, con permiso. So United Way 211, not only in Minnesota, but across the nation and the territories, Puerto Rico 211, y ahí te ayudan. So thank you very much. Yeah, yes. Maria Carreras Vega helped instill that way back when it started, way back. She worked the call center. Absolutely fabulous. So yay to United Way.
And thank you for mentioning that, Carmen, because something that not everybody knows is our 211 line is completely funded by United Way. So we do not receive government funding. That is thanks to our donors and our partners that we're able to run the line. But we also partner with other United Ways across the country. You're correct. So people may remember the fires in California. Our 211 line act as a responder, an emergency responder for that. So when the 211 center in California couldn't take the phone calls because they themselves needed to get out, right, and get to safety, we are 211 here in Greater Twin Cities United Way stepped up to help with those phone calls and help navigate the evacuation process for people in California. Likewise, when we had the flooding in Duluth in the up north area, we also stepped in. So while it is center here in Minnesota, we do partner across the country when there is emergency response that is needed.
Yep.
Carmen, this is wonderful. Thank you, Yvette, and thank you, Carmen. Carmen, I don't want to not talk about your experience as a cancer survivor. And, you know, you and I were working to get
fitness. You saved my life.
As a priority back in the day. We both got into a boot camp situation. And I think your testimony is similar to mine. I heard you say that the rigor exercise, working out and being consistent over a long period of time with tough trainers fortified you to address the most difficult fight of your life, and that was your experience with cancer, only for me to have the same story with prostate cancer, right? So it was the training that we both got that, in my view, gave me the attitude and the will to keep pushing, to keep being, and to claim healing in every aspect of my life. But if you would share your story, because it's a wonderful story.
Wow. And you know, this just validates the work that Insight does, because it's much more than a newspaper with ads, you know, go buy your toaster over at the corner. And not only did you give me a chance to write and help me to write, but what, you came up with this boot camp thing. And it was what, 8-10 weeks? Mm-hmm. Very vigorous. And I said, no way. But you said, oh, I'm going to pay you. And I thought, oh, I want to join you. And I blogged, and all my blogs were belly aching. I hate this. I'm never going to do this. I stink. Everybody screams at me. Just complain, complain, complain. And towards the end, it was like, yeah, I can do this. I can do that. And, you know, hey, I was a winner. But 2 months later, I was diagnosed with breast cancer. And had it not been for those 10 weeks of just that boot camp. And the only reason I went was because of Insight News. I had, you know, hacer a cumplir. But it turned out it saved my life. It saved my life, that that vigorous training, losing all that weight. But the most important part, I feel, that really turned me to a survivor was my positive thinking. It was no more, it was, you know, yeah, I can do this. And it was an incredible, I keep thinking, if it wasn't for that 10 horrible weeks that, and you won a national award. We won we were like, you know, it was a big deal, that with Mayo Clinic and the twins, the Target Mayo Clinic. It was very, yes. And I did not want to continue, but I had to. And think another serendipitous thing, una bendición que uno nunca sabe lo que está pasando. And look at that. And the same thing with you. Isn't that? Yeah. Mm-hmm. So that just tells me we got to keep doing this. You know, we got to keep bringing in la salud, our children are, you know, not eating healthy. All they do is sit in a machine and they're not moving and they're not drinking water. And so I think Inside News needs to go back and bring in the boot camp.
Well, there we go. Listen, my friends, Yvette, Carmen, thank you both for being here. What a wonderful hour this has been. And we're towards the end. I want to give you both a chance to either invite or suggest or tell our viewers and listeners something that they should be thinking about 1 hour or 1 year or one lifetime. Yvette, what's on your mind?
What is on mine? Well, let's say Latinos have been here for even before English was spoken. Spanish has been spoken in this land even before English was spoken. We are here to stay. We are contributors to this community. We are lawyers, teachers, nurses, frontline workers, essential workers. We are everywhere. We're not asking for hand-me-downs. We do work and earn what we have. So my invitation and what I'm thinking is for people to dig deeper, to learn about our stories. I am certainly taking the time to learn about the stories that I don't know of African-American communities and our indigenous communities. So I invite people to do the same, to approach it with curiosity, to try something new, to listen to Spanish music, to watch Bad Bunny at the Super Bowl and be curious about it. And during this Hispanic Heritage Month, to visit an event and just know that many times we're just afraid of what we don't know. But when we give the chance to learn, we're always surprised.
That's right. Carmen, 30 seconds, 30 seconds.
Beautiful. Don't believe the hype. Don't believe that we don't get along, that we, you know, la comunidad negra doesn't like the Latino community. Don't believe the hype. And I agree with mi hermana Yvette. You know, you feel like you want to move when you hear the drink, the beat. That's because you're Latino. So I leave you with the joyous prayer that we all, you know, as human beings, just love and embrace each other. And thank you.
Let me close with the note from Queen Mother.